Welcome back, guys. DUGS and KMOX 404. So I believe today will be the second to last day in the Trump trial, at least as far as testimony goes. Tomorrow, I believe Trump is off for his son's graduation or graduation party or something like that. And then Michael Cohen will be back on the stand Friday. So, Chet, just catching the little bit here and there, it sounds like they're trying to make a lot of hay, obviously, about if Michael Cohen is a liar. He's a serial liar. He lies in court. He lies to Congress. He lies to everybody. He lies to his wife. It doesn't matter. He lies. But then this phone call where he supposedly was dropping the dime on the Stormy Daniels stuff, and it's all over with, boss, don't worry about it. But he was actually talking about a 14-year-old kid. Like, what's going on?
Yeah, first of all, it is extremely difficult to not be able to see Michael Cohen testifying. And it's tough to judge how he's coming across and how he's coming across to a jury. So, you know, we have to rely upon some reporter who's inside the courtroom relays out of the courtroom. And juries will be told at the end when they're instructed by the court that not only do they weigh credibility on what's said, what's not said, the conflicts and the contradiction, but also on how it's said and how they respond to particular questions. I don't think that the cross-examination, albeit I didn't think that it was going to be a very difficult cross-examination because there was so much ammunition for Cohen. I think that they got caught down in the minutiae, got caught in the weeds. They spent, you know, a lot of time talking about, well, he's a liar. He's a liar. Oh, yeah, there's no doubt about that. And of course, he told some very serious lies. I mean, lying to Congress is not exactly a very good thing. And they spent a lot of time going through the direct examination. And that's not a very good thing either, because all you're doing is highlighting something that he said on direct, and you're not contradicting him or conflicting with anything. But finally, they got down to, it was right, I believe right before the lunch break, they got down to the conversation that he had with Keith Schiller. Now, Keith Schiller was Trump's bodyguard at the time, back in, this was an October 24th conversation that he had with Keith Schiller. What he testified to on direct examination was that right after the deal with Stormy Daniels, right after she was paid, right after that and the non-disclosure agreement had been signed, that he contacted Trump in order to explain to him that the deal was done, the heat was off, not a problem. And what he said was that he didn't know where Trump was, but he contacted Schiller, who he believed was with Trump at the time. And then they had a conversation, and Schiller put him in touch with Trump, I guess put him on speaker or whatever he testified to. I don't remember that part of it on direct. But in any event, that's when he let Trump know that the heat was off and Stormy Daniels was basically taken care of. So what Todd Blanche did today was he led him down the path. And that's what a good cross-examiner will do. They'll lay the foundation of where they're going. And he starts off with, you know, you were calling Schiller, but you also had a problem with a 14-year-old and a problem with a 14-year-old who was harassing you. And isn't it true that you contacted Schiller to take care of the situation that you had with the 14-year-old? Well, no. But then he had text messages that apparently Cohen may never have seen, and that's the question in my mind as to, I find it hard to believe that the prosecutor never shared that with Cohen, particularly since this was a very critical conversation, and not the only conversation, however, that he had with Donald Trump to relay the information or relay what was going on with Stormy Daniels. But in any event, He shows them this, and basically he says, well, doesn't this text message essentially say, you know, you were calling him about this situation with this 14-year-old because the 14-year-old made the mistake of not blocking his phone number, and you called him back and told you that he was going to, you know, you were going to report him to the Secret Service or whatever it was. And the kid said, yeah, I'm only 14. And that's the reason that you were calling him. And he started to equivocate a little bit. Well, I don't think, but maybe this, maybe that. And the phone conversation that he had with Schiller only lasted a minute and 36 seconds. So the point that they were making was, well, wait a minute, you're advising Trump of a very critical piece of this puzzle and Stormy Daniels, and on top of that, you're talking to Schiller about this 14-year-old, and this whole conversation, this whole discussion only took a minute and 36 seconds, and you never said that during the course of your direct examination. So that's pretty strong. I mean, that's pretty strong evidence that was acquired during cross-examination. But again, I don't think, and the question now is, in any trial, the prosecutor has direct examination, the defense has cross-examination, and then it goes back to the prosecutor for redirect examination. And so, if he hasn't touched Cohen during his entire cross-examination, it's pretty good for a prosecutor to say nothing further, no direct. But in this case, I think they're going to have to go back and they're going to have to clean this situation up with respect to Keith Schiller. Now, the other part of this problem is they've raised that issue. Keith Schiller is not on their list of potential witnesses. So now, going into the closing argument later on, we have a situation where nobody's calling Keith Schiller, who was there, and nobody is going to be calling Ellen Wesselberg. So in this jurisdiction here, there'll be an instruction if both witnesses like that are equally available to both parties, then you can't comment that the reason one side or the other didn't call them as a witness is because their testimony would be adverse to that side. So we'll see what kind of instruction, if any, in that jurisdiction that they get at the time. And there were a couple of other little points that I think were probably pretty good. One was that the defense challenged Cohen on the tape recording that he made. And that was the tape recording that he made with Donald Trump when they were talking about McDougal and they were talking about paying the magazine for her story, or reimbursing, rather, Pecker for running that story and paying her. And the point I think that they were making on that is that at the time that Cohen recorded Trump, he recorded him surreptitiously. And at the time also, Cohen was his client. And a lawyer, it's unethical for a lawyer to record your client. Now, in New York, as is in the state of Missouri, for example, there's only one party to the conversation that's necessary. And usually that's the party, obviously, that's doing the recording. So you don't have to tell anybody that you're recording in this jurisdiction and in New York. But in this case, so that part was fine. He didn't violate any rules or laws when he recorded Trump, but he violated the ethical standards, I think is where they were going, by recording the statement of his own client. Now, previously, Cohen had said, well, the reason I did that was so I could show it to David Pecker so that David Pecker knew that Trump was going to go ahead and reimburse him for the $150,000 that he paid to Karen McDougal. So I don't know how far that goes. I mean, again, this jury doesn't have to like Michael Cohen. Michael Cohen is a liar. There's no question about it. Michael Cohen is an unethical lawyer. Michael Cohen's been disbarred. Michael Cohen has lied. We all knew that before Michael Cohen ever took the witness stand. And it's one of those things where a prosecutor has to make a decision. Well, you know, we've got a guy here, a cooperating witness here, but he comes with a whole lot of baggage. And so what they'll do is they'll sit down and they'll say, do we really need him? And I think at the end of the day here, yes, they really needed him. Because they really needed that testimony to set up the direct connection with Donald Trump. Because at the end of the day, Trump's intent is going to have to be proved by the prosecution. And if they can't get his intent and the intent to conceal another crime by fabricating the business records, then they're not going to get the felony. They're not going to get the conviction. And of course, Michael Cohen has to also say, you know, that he paid me $35,000 a month for a year, and it had nothing to do with reimbursing. We were covering that. We were concealing that. And so it's hard for a jury to believe that Donald Trump, being as tight with the buck as he was, as according to the evidence, that he would do that for a year, pay him $35,000 for a year, and not know why he was paying him, or at least not make an inquiry as to why he was paying him.
Chip, let me ask you. So Donald Trump is charged with multiple misdemeanors, multiple felonies. The jury should get this case somewhere between Tuesday and Wednesday next week. What are their options? What can the jury do with this?
I don't think that the 34 counts involve any misdemeanors. I think the statute of limitations has run on the misdemeanors. So I think this is just the felony. I could be wrong about that, but I believe it's just the felony. Because otherwise, if there was a misdemeanor involved, you would instruct on the misdemeanor and then the lesser included offense. So in other words, if you don't find him guilty of the felony, you can consider whether or not he's guilty of a misdemeanor. But I don't think that you're going to see a jury instruction on that. You know, and the other part of this equation is that the jury's going to sit there and think, okay, I mean, they're going to know about misdemeanors and felonies. And particularly, you've got two lawyers on here, which is going to be interesting as to how they're going to react to all this and whether or not, you know, did you charge the felony, you know, but you're really trying to prove a misdemeanor. And the whole concept then of Trump's testimony. The question is now, is he going to testify? And if he doesn't testify, again, in this jurisdiction, what can happen is that the defense can request an instruction that no adverse inference can be drawn from the defendant's failure to testify. And the reason for that is because it's a Fifth Amendment privilege, and the Fifth Amendment privilege extends through the entire trial, and the burden never shifts to the defense. So the lawyers, though, in there, and I think one's a litigator. I don't think either are criminal-type litigators. But, you know, they may know that they can't hold that against him if he doesn't testify. And that's another reason why you don't want lawyers on your jury, because they'll control the whole deliberation.
Some of the easy stuff. So anything less than a unanimous guilty verdict would be a hung jury. I mean, if it's unanimously for an acquittal, it's an acquittal. But if there's one or more holdouts, then it's a hung jury. And as you and I both know, judges will push you and push you and push you. You go back and try again, go back and try again. I'm guessing that this would be the mother of all. You go back and try again before this Mershon would actually state that it's a hung jury.
Yes. Every judge is very careful, and particularly, obviously, because Marchand is walking on eggshells from the start of this case. So you want to do, it's called an Allen charge in the federal court, and you push them and push them and push them as much as you can, but you've got to be careful that you're not influencing the decision, whether guilty or not guilty, by pushing them too far. But, yeah, I think, and you know, the public criticism he's going to get. I mean, the first time that there's an indication mm-hmm. that it's hung, you know that all the Trumpers out there are going to be pounding on the door saying, you know, mistrial, 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 it's a hung jury. And then the state has a decision to make if it's hung. And again, it's only one that can hang it because, as you correctly say, it has to be unanimous. The prosecution then has the decision to make as to whether or not they want to retry it. And sometimes prosecutors do, sometimes they don't. They'll get the vote. They'll get not who voted where, but they'll get what the separation was. You know, was it one that hung it or two that hung it or you know, 11 that hung it. And that will go into their consideration about whether or not they want to try it. My guess is that even if it's one, they probably won't want to retry this.
I'm guessing you're right.
You know. So,
all right, man. We'll you take the weekend off. We'll talk to you next week.
Okay. Thank you.
There you go, Wheels. You said you needed some heavy metal to get that Santana song out of your head.
Nah, this isn't enough.
Journey.
Not enough.
Just listen to that metal grind.
Although this is better, though.
Yeah. You think?
Yeah. A lot.
I could fart and it'd be better than Santana.
Well, it depends on how long it took.
They're coming with Counting Crows, my favorite band, and I'm pissed.
Oh, so you can always just show up in the middle.
No, but then like you're getting there at 9 p.m. That's bedtime.
That's true.
Kidding me?
Why can't they do concerts at like 3 p.m.?
Who knows?
It's too damn hot.
I don't know.
If there's a concert on a Saturday, it should start at noon and it should be over by 2.
No,
and
it's too hot.
I feel very firmly about that.
Too hot. And plus, nobody wants to be day drinking.
Yeah, mm-hmm. That sucks. No one wants that.
Yeah. Famously hated day drinking.
Yeah.
Question for you.
Yes.
Blanco from the Astros just got a 10-game suspension for having sticky stuff in his baseball glove. The rules, I understand it, is you can have sweat and rosin, but even that, if you have too much of either one and it's an advantage, you can't do it. I forget who said it, but some old OG famously said, if you're not cheating, you're not trying. Where do you come down on this?
Well, I mean, there's a room in here where there could be an accidental. If all that's on there is rosin, you're not allowed to put it on your glove or like rub it into your glove or whatever. But if that's all there is room to believe that it was an honest mistake. I find it fascinating, though, that he's 30 years old and before this year hadn't had a whole lot of major league success.
Oops.
And now he's been one of the best starters in the American League and threw a no-hitter earlier this
mm-hmm.
year. Now, he was pretty good last year in kind of like part-time fill-in duty, but only serviceable. And before that, he'd only had like 7 games in the major leagues, and he's now 30. So keep in mind, you know, it's interesting when someone makes a jump like that. It doesn't mean he's doing it. Doesn't mean he's cheating. It just adds a layer to the conversation.
So you played catch with me. You've seen my curveball. It's pretty nasty.
it's got a lot of bite.
What does the gunk do?
Well, it gets you a better grip so you can spin the ball more.
Okay.
Right?
And
command it better. Like, it's a combination of them, right? So the better grip you have, the more you can pull on the laces and the more spin the ball will get. And then even if that weren't the case, just having better control of it means you're going to have better control of the ball. It's not sliding out of your fingers at all. If you've ever had touched like a brand new Major League Baseball, I have the one in there for the first base. They're slippery.
I rubbed
the ball up when we were waiting because we were sitting in the room and I'm like, let's find some sunscreen and you know get it so it's not so slippery so I won't throw it like crazy. I did. And you know that's why pitchers have argued that they should allow something because they sometimes have the ball slippery, it's hard to control, and they're going to try to get the spin anyway, which some of the pitchers argue is leading to some more arm injuries, but I don't think that's really backed up yet.
How do you not just get instantly caught if you have gunk on the ball?
Well, you can't see it.
But you feel it on the ball, right? Isn't every ball like intercepted by
somebody? But here's the problem. The ball, most baseballs only last a couple pitches.
Yeah.
And then they're out. So there's not much on there.
Mm. Okay,
and it's running into the dirt, and you never, and then some of it rubs off in the catcher's glove.
Okay. 439 DGS on KMOX. I have been sucked into something on TikTok.
Is it the same
No.
It's not the horse
this
videos?
This isn't nearly as bad. No.
Okay, okay.
It's not child boxing or stud horse.
Andrew has missed so much.
Child boxing?
Yeah. Yeah.
I just looked at his face and his jaw dropped.
I love it.
Over the weekend, all I was getting was kids boxing.
I love it.
Like in sanctioned events. Yeah.
That's so great.
And then it was just.
I'm watching those.
It was just suddenly stud horses doing their business. Mm-hmm. So.
Business
no, van life.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
I love
sell everything, buy a van. Like, I'm not a rich man by anyone's definition. I could buy one hell of a van.
Yes, you could.
And I could stay out there pretty long.
Mm-hmm.
And it sounds pretty good.
I love van life.
I'd be home within 2 days. I'd get so lonely. But
I wouldn't even make it through the night.
Van life is like my cozy fantasy when I need to like fall asleep at night.
Yeah.
I imagine that I'm in like a van.
Do you have a generator in your van?
Instead of the big bed.
Depends, Kev. You can go real bare bones or you can go with like, you know, a $200,000 Clarence Thomas kind of setup.
Okay, because like if I had a gaming chair and
you can generator
and internet. I'm probably okay.
You get a Jackery. That's what it's called.
Yep.
It's like a portable generator, and it's called the Jackery. And I'm not making that up, and I love saying it because it sounds very funny. And that's the like portable generator that you have in the back, and that's how you hook up your TV or you know video games or whatever.
Now, that would be a show. We've talked about the Bigfoot hunt for a while and getting some sort of a recreational vehicle to camp in. But if we got like a real Mamba Jamba and we took a road trip.
Oh, that
like
would be Scooby-Doo. So great.
Like Scooby-Doo.
Listen, like bring the remote machine. Broadcast equipment and just stop and broadcast
yeah,
and then keep on road tripping. Dude.
Remember when I said that
you
we
guys would
walk
leave me
Katy
by
trail?
The side of the road?
Yeah.
Oh, I sure do.
We're going to walk the Katy Trail.
We're going to get this sponsored. This is going to be insane.
Yeah, I don't know what I was thinking.
Someone call Byerly. Let's go.
We were not going to. You guys were going to. I was going to keep pace.
You hear me making camp?
Yeah, I was gonna be keeping pace in a car.
Do you think you could do van life?
I think I could. I really do.
I feel like you could.
I think I'd probably check it out. I mean, it's very appealing to me, but I think I like my creature comforts. You know
I like
what I mean?
Watching it.
I love watching.
I like watching other people do it.
Idea.
Oh, yeah. Or like van camping.
Do they ever park it down by the river?
I did just survive 30 hours without electricity. So
you're all set.
You're on your way.
I'm basically halfway.
You're
there
basically on your way to Little House on the Prairie.
You should get a Jackery.
I should. That's a really. I'm going to look that up on the break and get my own.
They're
not
super expensive.
Well, the word super is doing some work there.
Well, I think they're like a couple $100.
Oh, that's not bad.
That's not bad. Have power when there is no power.
I could just carry that in a book bag.
Yeah. No, I'm totally wrong. They're like $4,000.
Okay. There you go. That's what I thought.
A bigger book bag.